Hello and welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the place to be if you are a sci-fi or fantasy reader. My name is Laura and I am your host. I am a reader, writer, and whiskey drinker here to share with you some amazing self-published authors within the sci-fi and fantasy genres. On today's episode, we have K.E. Barden. Let me tell you a little bit about K.E. A Brisbane-based author, she lives in a world of words. Her first novel, The Gilded Mirror, was completed during NaNoWriMo entirely on a mobile phone. She's an avid reader of fantasy and sci-fi. She also loves developing her craft and skill as a writer in competitions and challenges. K.E., like all of us, balances her full-time job with her love of writing, and she dreams of bringing magic into the many readers' lives who share her passion for great stories and wonderful adventures between the pages. It was so much fun talking with K.E. I can't wait to dive into this interview. But first, let me tell you a little bit about her book, The Gilded Mirror. Eveline Rafter has only ever sought one thing, to avenge her father. So when she's hired by the gorgeous huntsman, she's thrust into a dangerous and dark quest to find the lost princess Snow. Set against the dark forest of old fairy tales, in a kingdom ruled by an evil queen who consumes hearts for youth and power, Eve sets out on a journey with her closest companion, Porchid, a Riverbell fairy. Eveline has a gift. Not only can she hit every target with her pair of twin golden knives, but she can also find lost things, a watch, a purse, even a person. Just not the one she longs for most, her father. With the huntsman's hero complex and Eveline's only goal to acquire enough medallions to avenge her father, they become unlikely companions. What she didn't bargain for was the bloodthirsty queen, or the dwarves with split personalities, or a prince whose most endearing quality was his sneeze. Along their journey, Eveline soon finds that her worst fears are not the creatures crawling from the shadows, but her own desires. Eve questions her own motives and choices, falling under the spell of the huntsman and pushing against a destiny predetermined for her. With dark secrets unraveled and trust broken, Eve begins to question the world around her and the one thing she trusted most, herself. With the princess encased in a crystal coffin, hidden away in a magic realm, will she find a way to break the curse? Or will they all fall to darkness? Such a fun concept, so many fairy tales to talk about, so let's dive in with K.E. Barden. Hello, Kim. Welcome to Read It With Whiskey. How's your day going so far?
Hi, it's so good to be here.
I'm so excited to talk with you for a little bit, to talk all about your book, The Gilded Mirror, which I absolutely love. But before we dive into the actual book, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you and how you became a writer?
Yeah, well, I'm from Australia. The accent didn't give it away. So The Gilded Mirror is my first little pet project that I did just to see if I could write a book. I've always sort of dabbled in writing a little bit. It's something that I've always, I guess, yearned to do. So this is my little pet project that turned into a five-year project. And I just found something that I really, really loved and I'm now addicted. So, but I'm 30 years old. I live in Brisbane with my pet cat and my partner, Jared. And yeah, when I get free time, I drink a lot of wine and write a lot on my balcony.
I love it. When I get some free time, I'm drinking whiskey and writing on my back porch. So we have that in common.
Absolutely. There's nothing better.
Nothing better. So yeah, we have a couple different books that you already have out. So tell us a little bit about what you have published. And they're sitting right behind you. If people are watching the video here, we've got The Gilded Mirror and the second book, These Grim Fates. So tell us a little bit about these books.
So as you can see, I got the first two. Book three will be out in November, but it is the start of a series. So The Gilded Mirror was written in 2018 and it came out March last year, but it's a fairy tale retelling in, I guess, a Shrek versus Once Upon a Time versus Grimm fairy tales type take with a sprinkle of fantasy and Lord of the Rings, I guess, if you want to put it in there. But yeah, it's been a huge project of mine and it's evolved so much, but I really wanted to, I guess, create something a little bit different, something that was really close to my heart, and especially after the original Grimm fairy tales, which are quite dark, but they've got a lot of cool stuff in there, which I think is really underestimated and a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to read.
I know. And I was going to ask you about that because this is after the Grimm fairy tales, and the Grimm fairy tales are very dark. If anybody has actually read the original, they're not the happily ever after stories of Disney that Disney makes them out to be.
Absolutely not.
They are so dark. And so what inspired you or motivated you to kind of put your own spin on these fairy tales?
I'm a huge fan of fairy tale retellings. I don't know if you are, but books like, I guess, the Cinder series by Marissa Meyer, a few like that. But fairy tales, I've always had a bit of a fascination with, and myths and legends as well. It was actually, I don't know if you've heard of the fairy tale, The Little Matchbox Girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's a little unknown one, but a lot of people don't know about it. My mum was talking about it at this party, and I remember crying when I was 8 years old reading it. For some reason, it's horrible. For anyone who hasn't read it, it's about this little girl who sells matchsticks and ends up freezing to death in the snow while watching a happy family eat a meal at Christmas. It's horrible. But there's also something quite magical about it. And I think a lot of the older fairy tales do that. And I sort of wanted to capture that in a more modern way for our readers. And that's how The Gilded Mirror was born. The Gilded Mirror, the first book, is just, I guess, the tip of the iceberg. So much more happens in there. But with Grimm's fairy tales, there's so many of them that can be interweaved together in such a seamless, natural way. And I've tried to, I guess, really, really take on that. So what it originally started off as is completely different now. But yeah, we can thank The Little Matchbox Girl for that inspiration. So
The Little Matchbox Girl, I watched a silent film adaptation just with, you know, the music instrumental background. And oh, it was just so sad because I had heard the story before, but then watching the actual like little cartoon remake, and oh, it's only like not even a five minute film. And I was just like bawling my eyes out because it's just so, oh, anyway.
I think it came out in a short, like before Anastasia or something, didn't it? It came out. Maybe? It was like before one of the longer animated movies, I think, because I do remember that. Yeah.
I think I ended up actually watching it in like a shorts type of like a compilation of a bunch of different shorts. And that's where I originally saw it. So yeah, all of those ones that they put before the movies nowadays. Yeah. They were all compiled into one. So much fun. So when it comes to these Grimm stories, how did you decide which ones to actually put into the book? Because they are sprinkled out throughout the entire book. And like you just said, it's just the tip of the iceberg. There's more to come in books 2 through 4. So how did you decide which stories that you wanted to highlight?
I think Snow White was always going to be the main one, and go figure, it's not my favorite one either. So I don't know where I plucked that from. The Little Mermaid's actually my favorite one. Yeah. So it started off with that way. And then as I was writing, Rumpelstiltskin just seemed to fit in the beginning quite well. I guess without giving spoilers, you know, Hansel and Gretel kind of weaved its way in. And then Jack the Beanstalk did. And the funny thing about this book, or I've sort of learnt my writing style, is that I let them grow themselves. And it has grown the series into what will be 5 books as opposed to 3. But I don't think it would have done justice if I hadn't done it that way. And they've all sort of grown themselves. And it's been really fascinating to kind of watch that magic come to life, because it's as if they've gone, ooh, it's my turn. So there's only a few small ones that I've purposely put in there, you know, like a name of a tavern or something that relates to a minor fairy tale that not a lot of people will know about. But in general, they've done it themselves, and it's been quite interesting to watch. It's like magic, really. Yeah.
I love retellings because you can pivot and spin the story in whichever way that you want to. And I think you did it in a really fun way. So you just mentioned there's actually going to be 5 books in this series now.
Yes. Yeah. So okay. I'm writing the finale right now. And it's definitely the finale. It's got finale vibes about it. So
finale
we're on the home stretch.
I love it. And is it going to be the same set of characters throughout all 5, or do we get to meet some new people that go along with the adventure? Yeah.
There will be new people, but I'm not, as you know, with the 7 dwarves, it's kind of hard because you go immediately from 3 main characters to 12. Yeah. And I didn't make their names easy. Sorry. But we definitely do see new characters, and a lot of them impact our main characters and our MCs in huge ways. I think there's maybe 1 or 2 that come in that play a bit of a main role. But otherwise, it's quite consistent with, you know, Malik and Evelyn and Hansel and following those guys through their adventure. Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to dive into the characters in just a little bit, but I would love for you to tell our listeners, why should someone pick up this book, or who should be the person to pick up this book?
I think anyone who wants a sense of nostalgia, or anyone who loves a fairy tale or wants a little bit of magic. I'm very much an escapist reader. I love to read something to get away for a little while and suspend my belief. And I think that this book is for those kind of readers. So the ones that want a little bit of the whimsical, the magical, you know, morally gray characters, anyone who loves that kind of stuff. I think it appeals to anyone from that genre. I actually originally wrote it for a young adult audience, and I've ended up getting a bigger response from those in their 20s and 30s than I have in the young adults. So that's actually been really lovely to see. But my dad sent it to an 80-year-old grandma of mine, like, I don't know, somewhere in Tasmania, and she ended up loving it as well. So I don't want to put an age on it. I think it's for anyone who wants to escape for a little bit and get a little bit of magic.
Yeah. And I think because it's a fairy tale retelling, no matter your age, you've heard of these stories before. And so you can kind of relate 100%. Back. And yeah, that nostalgia just comes to life as you're reading. So what type of emotions do you think your readers will go through while they're reading this? Will they laugh? Will they cry? Will they get uncomfortable, challenged, anything like that?
I think there's a lot of one-liners in there, which made apparently a few of my friends snort while they're drinking coffee. So I think there are a lot of laughs in there. There are a lot of emotions where we're, you know, growing with these characters. And a lot of this book or this series is about growth. But I also think there's quite a few shock factors in there, quite a lot like the old fairy tales did, where it's not necessarily an unhappy ending, but it's not a happy ending either. So I want, you know, to be invested, and I want people to be invested, and I want them to feel shock and love and awe and sadness and laugh.
I love that. I love that. And yeah, let's dive in a little bit more into that then. The characters, I think, yeah, that shocking factor. I mean, it starts right in the prologue of the book. The prologue sets up kind of like the tone of the story. You realize right away it's going to be more of that dark and gritty type of grim retelling.
Absolutely.
And we meet a queen. So that first prologue, it introduces us to Queen Marina. Is that how you pronounce it?
Marina or Morena, depending what country you're from.
Right. And yeah, pronunciations. I always say the names of characters in my head one way, and then I'm talking to the author and I'm like, yep, I did not pronounce it that way in my brain, but it's fine.
I feel like it's a repeat of like Hermione. I don't know about you, yeah. But when like Harry Potter came out, I read it as Hermione when I was like 8, and it was Hermione.
definitely a situation like that. But yeah, so we have Queen Marina, and she's the first character that's introduced in the prologue, and she does an act of pure evil. And that's, it really pulled me in right away, because I was like, oh, this character right here. So kind of talk a little bit about her and the importance of her within this story. And I know that she's your favorite character. So yeah, elaborate a little bit on her.
She's, I wanted an evil queen. Obviously you need an evil queen. There's always got to be a villain of some kind, but I wanted someone who I guess is a little bit different from what we've seen. So she's a very strong, independent woman. She knows what she wants, and she's been through trauma, but she's also dominated in her own way and taken what she's wanted from the realm that hasn't, I guess, been overly kind to her or to anyone, I guess, for anyone who reads the book. But she was definitely my favorite to write. I think she's got so many layers about her. And there are so many decisions or things that she's done that I guess later we explore a bit more. Again, it's about change and growth. So I think we get to understand Marina a bit more, but I wanted this first book to just really introduce her, and I wanted you to love to hate her, which I adore, which is also just so much fun to write. Like, villains are fun to write.
Villains are so much fun to write. And she's a great villain. She hits all of those evil factors that we need in an evil queen. So tell us a little bit about Evelyn. She's our main character, and tell us kind of what her struggle is and the purpose of her story throughout the book.
So Evelyn doesn't belong to a fairy tale. So I sort of did this arc where she's her own entity traveling through this realm of magic, you know, and fairy tale creatures and stories around her. I guess that's where it's sort of a once upon a time you know, similarity, except that it's not in modern times. It's still back in medieval fairy tale times. She's an interesting character because I love Devlin and I understood her drive for vengeance, which is her main goal in this for her father, which if you read the book, you'll learn why. But most of the feedback I've received about Evelyn, believe it or not, people don't like her, which I found really interesting. So yeah, she's just really trying to find her way in the world and she's trying to find, you know, hope and some friends and I guess try and find meaning in a realm, again, that hasn't been very nice to her. And she is finally starting to see things differently. And a lot of this is about her journey and, you know, I guess looking at what vengeance really means.
Oh, I love that, what vengeance really means. And yeah, I can understand why people wouldn't like her. I think that makes sense. Mm. I think she's a main character that she's like kind of irritating, but in a good way. It's like, why is she going to do this? Or, you know, like just the little one-liners that you said that she says. And I think I really liked her character, but also because of how she interacts with the other characters within the story. I think it helped her character grow. So let's talk about her best friend, the little fairy.
Oh, Porkid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another name that's either Porchard or Porkid, depending on where you're from. I had a podcast with this guy in the UK and he said Porchard. And I was like, you know what, that actually works really well. So, I based her off Tinkerbell.
I was going to say, did you do that? Yeah.
Absolutely. I just love the sassy Tinkerbell that Disney made. Just that scene in particular where she's in the drawer, Peter, like, shoves her in the drawer and she's trying to squeeze through the lock and her butt's too big and she gets really angry and jealous of Wendy. And I just wanted a sidekick like that. And I ended up creating a breed of, I guess, fairies called Riverbell, where they did something similar to Tinkerbell where she changed colors based on her moods. But I wanted her to be a bit more, I guess, stable than Tink. So while she's got the mood, she's a little bit flirty. She gets distracted by shiny things. She doesn't trust humans too much except for Evelyn. And I think, you know, for two loners, their initial friendship, I just thought was a really beautiful thing that it was about these two best friends just starting off from chapter one with two completely, completely different personalities.
Definitely. They're very, very different. But her loyalty, too, I think was really impressive because she is so loyal to the people who she loves. And I just really liked her throughout. And I liked the concept of the color. And she was great. She was one of my favorite characters, even though she doesn't speak and she doesn't have that type of dialogue. I think that made it even better. All right. So talk a little bit about Hansel and Malik. Who are they?
Yes. So Hansel is the huntsman of our story. So he hires Evelyn to go find the lost Princess Snow. And he ends up doing it with his best friend, Malik, who is a troll. Go figure, Malik seems to be one of the top favorite characters of the series, which really surprised me. He's just nothing what you would expect a troll to be. He's well-read, he's loyal, he's, you know, emotional, he's not aggressive, and he really, again, loyalty, loves Hansel. You know, there's a strong bond there of you know, bromance. and it's really nice to see, especially considering in my particular storyline, there is quite a bit of, I guess, racism between species and who belongs where and who does what and what they should be doing. So seeing, you know, Hansel with a troll straight away, I think sort of set that precedence of they're different and they think differently. And I guess what they're up against in the view of how they're being judged or what their expectations are.
Yeah. Oh, I like that dynamic, that friendship. I think you did that really well because we have our main character, Evelyn, with Porkid and their best friends. And then you have Hansel and Malik. And I think those dynamics and putting them together was really interesting as well. So as they go on their journey and you can kind of get to know the characters and yeah, super fun. And yeah, I'm not going to go into spoilers, so I'm going to just stop talking about characters specifically. But do you base any characters on people that you know? Do your friends or family seep into the characters at all?
I think that's a really interesting question because I don't do it on purpose, but I think as a writer, I think you subconsciously do it sometimes. My partner, Jared, actually thinks that he's Hansel.
Of course.
Which is pretty funny. So I've told him he's Morena, but... Yeah, I think there are certain qualities that you bring in to characters, or there are certain, you know, one-liners that you kind of think, oh, you know, that would be someone that I know. Like one in particular, there was a side character I've written in book four, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but they had one or two lines and personality traits that I went, oh my God, that's my mum. You know, completely unawares and by accident, but I definitely think it does seep in, though it's not on purpose, I promise.
Yep, subconsciously, something that we either love or hate about people gets put into the book, and you're like, I either really hope they notice it or I hope they don't notice it at all. So this book, we follow along some of these grim fairy tales, and something that I did want to touch on was the actual world building. So when mm-hmm. you created this world, how much did you carry over from the Grimm's traditional world, or how much did you build on your own?
No, the world building was interesting. One of my least favorite things as a reader, I don't know about you, is info dumping. Mm-hmm. When you read the first 10 chapters of a book and they've mentioned, you know, 50,000 places and all these rulers and all these, you know, and I really tried not to do that, which I actually found a bit of a challenge considering I've got so many species happening and there's already right. such a huge world there. But certain trickles of it, absolutely taken from Grimm's fairy tales. You know, the skinny piglet, where it starts off in that tavern, immediately I think of a fairy tale cottage tavern. The castles, all that kind of stuff has all been taken. And of course, the dark forest and the shadow forest, you can't have a fairy tale without some kind of magical forest. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world, though, was completely done, yeah, with a glass of wine on an A3 sheet of paper. And it just built itself from there. And initially, I wasn't going to share it with anyone. It was more so I could gauge where they were traveling, were they north, south, east, west? And I'm terrible with geography and direction, so I needed this personally. Plus, I love a good map in a book. I always refer back to them. So yeah, I would say, you know, about 40% is based off certain fairy tale, I guess, pieces or informational places. And some of them is completely made up just to help me navigate my own storyline. So yeah.
I love that. And yeah, I love maps in books. I love being able to see where the characters are, where they're going. And you can even look at the map and say, okay, well, they're going to come into some issues because this is the direction they're heading. And this comes into play, or this location, this house, whatever it may be. So I love that there's a map. And you did mention it, chapter one, The Skinny Piglet. And when I first read that chapter, I imagined exactly like you just said, that fairy tale yeah. cottage type of tavern. I actually wanted to touch on this too, the chapter headings. So we have chapter titles in every single chapter. I love that because it kind of gives you like a hint into what the chapter is going to be about, but without you really yeah. realizing it until you're into the chapter. So yeah, The Skinny Piglet is chapter number one, and it moves forward. You can read all the different chapter titles, kind of get an idea of what the book's going to be about. But why did you decide chapter titles? Like, what was the decision behind that?
Honestly, I don't know. It's like the Roman numerals. If you ask my beta readers who read my books, like while I'm editing and I get feedback from, they hate the Roman numerals. and a lot of them as well question the titles, especially if a chapter doesn't relate to that title. So they'll be like, what does this mean? Or, you know, anything like that. But I think I just went for, I wanted to go, I guess, for when you have the story where you've got like the three little pigs or the little mermaid or the golden goose. I wanted, I guess, to create that whimsical feeling, and giving it a chapter titles where it's, you know, the tricks of the trade or the skinny piglet or any of those, I felt like it just added to that theme. And it ended up sticking, and I ended up having a lot of fun creating those titles.
I've heard both sides of the spectrum. Some people love creating the chapter titles, and then other people, they're like, I did it in book one and now I have to do it in book two and I'm really struggling. So is it throughout the entire series, the chapter titles?
Throughout the entire series. I think though, from book two onwards, I've made it a bit more consistent. Every chapter starts with a the. So it's okay. always, you know, the something or other. Whereas in book one, I think I was still kind of finding my way.
Yeah.
With that, but yeah, it's definitely a theme that, you know, book three and book four and even book five that I'm writing at the moment, I've kept that consistency of the something or other. So some of them are really challenging. Definitely there are a few chapters where it just says new chapter in big capital letters and I just go, I don't know what to call it. But some of them, you know, I'll write it down and I'll just chuckle because, you know, it's a play on words or a play on a fairy tale, and Sometimes I wonder who'll get it.
Yeah. Have you ever had to pull your beta readers in to help you name a chapter before?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I love that when beta readers get really invested and they like send out ideas of what you can put in or little tweaks, things like that. Super fun.
It's so great. One of them, we had a few wines one night and she made up her entire alternative ending. She's read the first four. And it was just really interesting hearing what she thinks is going to happen or what she thinks is supposed to happen. I think the most enlightening thing about it is I was like, you've got so much. So I'm going to, you're going to laugh and cry and hate me. And then the other part, I actually changed one character's ending entirely because hers was way more suited and far more true to character than what mine was. So I have changed the character's ending based on her theory.
Very cool. Oh, that's exciting. What a time to be a beta reader. I love it. All right. So you actually wrote the beginning of this book during NaNoWriMo. And for those listening, NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month. It takes place every November. And then you have Camp NaNo in April and July. The idea behind NaNoWriMo is to write 50,000 words in 30 days. And so were you able to accomplish that within NaNoWriMo? And how long did it actually take you to write this first book?
The first book's an anomaly in itself. NaNoWriMo was coming up and I thought, you know what, this is it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to write like an Ella Enchanted. It's going to be one book and it's going to be awesome. Anyway, turned into five, as you know. I ended up writing, I think for that month, 77,000 words in 30 days. And I did it entirely on my mobile phone. I have little calluses on my pinkies from where I did it, but I ended up finishing the entire book, which is about 97,000 words in total. I ended up writing it in about 7 weeks. So it took me about 3 weeks after NaNo to finish it. And then I just let it sit down for, 3 months and ignored it until I could start to see if it actually made sense.
Yeah, go back and be like,
autocorrect. Yeah. My autocorrect is not my friend.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I couldn't imagine writing it on my phone. Like, I don't even really like texting. And so writing it on my phone, I did actually purchase a Bluetooth keyboard. So then I could use my phone, but I could actually like have a full keyboard and then still be out and about wherever I want to be. And it's been a game changer, really, because I can be anywhere and typing because I just can't do the typing on the phone. But props to you. 70,000 words in a month, 77 in a month on your phone. Very impressive. So were all the other books like that?
Never done it again.
No.
No, absolutely not. I think the year after that was 25 and then I hit 47. So I was so close. Oh, but and then the one that just finished, I did hit the 50,000 words. But yeah, the rest of them were on a computer. I learned my lesson after book one. I was done.
Oh, I love that. So much fun. All right. So let's dive into a few little questions more based on you as a reader. So what is your favorite genre to read?
Sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. I'm a sucker for that. I mean, occasionally I'll sprinkle some romance or rom-coms in there. But yeah, generally if it's fiction and there's some form of adventure or magic in it, I'm sold. Absolutely sold.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
And so in 2021, do you remember how many books you read last year?
30 or 40.
Okay. And how many are you going to read this year?
Well, this year I did that Goodreads reading challenge. I don't know if you do it. And I thought last year I wanted to do 60 and I didn't. So then this year I chose 60 again. And coming to the end of June, I've actually finished 50.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure around the 50 mark. So I'm definitely on a roll this year. Yeah. Catching up on that to be read list.
The TBR list is just, it's the death of me. I have so many books that I want to read. But yeah, as writers, we all start as readers. And so it's fun to learn about the reading habits and what types of books kind of foster that inspiration for writers. So what are you currently reading? Reading anything good right now?
I'm currently reading Lainey Taylor's new book, Strange the Dreamer.
Yeah, I don't think I've
heard of it. I don't know if
you've
heard of it.
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, so she wrote that series. Hold on, I think it's in my bookcase down there. Daughter of Smoke and Bone.
Okay.
She wrote the Daughter of Smoke and Bone series, and she's released a new duology called Strange the Dreamer. So I'm just about to finish that one, and I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. Mm. She's got very beautiful writing. Like, she's got, the most whimsical, magical prose, and her metaphors are just beautiful. Like, it's just beautiful writing. I couldn't remember what Daughter of Smoke and Bone was about, but I remembered how beautiful the writing was. And I'm just finding in this book that it's more conversations and revelations and prose more than plot. And sometimes I need a little bit of plot. I'm very plot driven as a reader. I like things to happen. And when it stagnates for a bit too long, I get a bit bored.
Right. Those action scenes. We need the action.
Yeah.
I love it.
Main characters kiss or action or, you know, somebody dies. I don't know, anything.
Somebody dies. Oh, I love it. All right. So you are working on this 5-book series right now, but do you have any other projects that you're working on in the meantime?
Actually, yes. I've recently plot planned my next novel, which I'm itching to start writing, but I'm also pushing myself to finish writing this series first, because I don't want to go off on a tangent and then just not finish it. And I feel like the finale is a big deal. So it's a sci-fi retelling of Beauty and the Beast. So I've got it all plot planned. It's all ready to go. It's going to be a duology and I'm really, really excited. Yeah.
Oh, definitely excited for that one. Do you have a timeline of when that might approximately be out?
Well, I'm hoping book 4 will come out next year and then book 5, maybe the beginning of the year after that. And then I'm thinking this one may be around a similar time to book 4 and book 5 coming out.
Okay.
But I don't know if I want to self-publish yet or whether I want to try for trad publishing, which, as you know, can take a bit of a while. So I'm going to see how I feel about it once it's written. So if I do go traditional publishing route and I'm one of the lucky ones, I guess, chosen, then, you know, it can take up to 2 years, but hopefully it's not that long.
Yeah, we'll definitely be following along on that journey. So this is Read It With Whiskey, and it wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. So Kim, what's your favorite whiskey to drink?
Well, I was thinking about this the other day, because there's the normal whiskey that I would drink here in Australia, but it's not my favorite whiskey. So 2 years ago, just before COVID hit, I was over in Edinburgh in Scotland, and we did this awesome whiskey tour. And as you probably know, Scotland has some amazing whiskey, and they served this one from Isle of Skye. And I don't know what the name of it is, but it was like really smoky and woody. And it's just stayed with me. I loved it so much.
I love that when a whiskey is like, you just think about it all the time. Well, I'll have to look into that and see what that one is.
Oh, if I find the name, research, I'll send it through.
Yeah, please do. All right. So where can people find you and your books and follow along with your journey?
On Instagram, you can find me under K.E. Barden Author. And on Facebook, I'm also under K.E. Barden Author. A lot of my books are sold anywhere that you can buy great books. So Booktopia, Book Depository, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you know, you name it, it's all there and ready to go. So I do have Linktree links as well on my profile, which go direct to Shoreline Publishing, which is who the books are published through, if you want to buy them direct from distributor. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I have had so much fun talking to you about your book. I absolutely adored it. And I'm excited to see where book 2 goes, because I got to stick with these characters. So just thank you so much for being on the show and taking your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Such a sucker for fairy tales, you guys. I had so much fun talking with K.E., talking about all the different fairy tales and the twists and turns within this story. And you guys, K.E. is such an amazing person. It was only about a week after we interviewed and I got a package in the mail, and she had sent over book 2, These Grim Fates. Oh my goodness, you guys. I have a lineup of books to read for Read It With Whiskey, but I am probably going to end up sneaking this one in between a few of the episode books, because I'm so excited to find out what happened to our lovable characters, Eve and Portia and everybody. So I just wanted to take this time to just say thank you to K.E. for sending me book 2. I'm so pumped to finally dive into this one. Maybe within the next week, we shall see. All right, next time on Read It With Whiskey, we're going to be talking to S.J. Pratt. She is the author of The 716, The 716, The 716, 716, 716, I don't know. We're going to talk about it in the interview. We will figure this out on what people are calling this book, because numbers are weird. Anyway, this is a really, really fun science fiction book, total feminism concept strung throughout the entire book. basically the world that they live in, men and women, their position in the world is completely flipped from what we are used to in our world. So talk about feminism, talk about the political stuff going on in the world. It gets very interesting. Don't worry, we don't talk too much about the politics of our current situation, but feminism is a very strong theme. And I'm just so excited that I was able to talk to SJ Pratt about where this story came from. And there's such a great story behind this book. So come back and let's talk about The 716 with SJ Pratt.
You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and I just wanted to personally hop in and say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would really appreciate it if you could go onto your favorite podcast platform and rate and review the show. By rating the show, you're going to help more people find the podcast so then we can grow. Once you review the show, share it on your social media, share your favorite episode with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.